we are seeing in real time the harmful and damning effects of systemic racism and state violence. We are seeing in real time the ignorance and, you know, the denial of climate change. We see in real time the way that worker power has been diminished as we go through this pandemic. And we are on the cusp of a tsunami, of a major recession as states go back into session, and they've seen huge decreases in state revenue. And that will have long-lasting impacts to all of our state structures, like our public institutions, our roads, our schools, every other aspect of civic life will be impacted. And so we sit at this threshold of transformation and say, the standard of leadership can't be status quo. We have to push harder and have to really understand all of the interlocking and interwoven components of how to shift power, because guess what, state legislators, that's your job.
Hello, this is the Great Battlefield Podcast. I'm Nathaniel G. Perlman. A great political battle is being fought right now between progressives and the forces of reaction on the other side. This show is about the political entrepreneurs and other progressive leaders who are finding new or improved ways to fight.
Hang in there, people. The battle continues. Part of the progressive ecosystem that you should know about is the State Innovation Exchange, which works to advance progressive change in the state legislatures. Neha Patel and Jesse Uliberry are the co-executive directors of SIX, and we had a lot to talk about, including their path to their roles, their goals for the organization, and how they try to lead it as a team. We had a good conversation, and you should listen. So, after a quick word with our sponsor, my interview with Jesse Uliberry and Neha Patel of the State Innovation Exchange.
Check out the large, detailed, and high-quality political data graphic posters from TimePlots. Our visual history of the American presidency, for example, lets you see the Clinton, Bush, Obama, and Trump presidencies in full context. TimePlots library includes visual histories of the United States House, the United States Senate, the Supreme Court, and the Democratic and Republican parties. Find them all at www.timeplots.com. Use the code BATTLEFIELD for a discount.
Would you each mind introducing yourselves and giving me quick biographies? Neha, first.
I'm Neha Patel. I am the co-executive director at State Innovation Exchange, also known as SIX. I have been here at SIX for about 3 years now, but my background, I spent the last 20 years working at the intersection of international development, public health, and global movement organizing. Started out working in New York and Chicago on HIV/AIDS prevention programs in immigrant communities, homeless communities. From there, moved to New Delhi, India, where I spent 3 years working at a South and Southeast Asia Regional Sexuality Center, where we worked on policy and advocacy reforms in 9 countries in the region. I'm doing a lot of organizing with civil society groups, advocacy groups, government officials to move reform with respect to sexuality and reproductive rights. And after that, came back to the U.S. to work for a nonprofit based in D.C. called FHI 360, where I led a lot of strategy, partnerships, analytical work for the organization whose focus was really on international development and civil society building. After my time at FHI 360, I decided to go into consulting, wanted to be able to bridge the gap between what I was bringing from the global perspective as well as organizational evolution to small to mid-sized nonprofits and the issues that I care about. And that's how I came to SIX. Started consulting from them in the middle of 2017. And then within 6 months was the interim executive director. I met Jesse several months later, and then he became the executive director of SIX. And we've actually been operating in a co-executive function for the past 2 years. And that's how I come to the work.
I definitely want to go into that co-executive director thing, because that's a somewhat rare and difficult thing sometimes, but could be wonderful if it works. What's your story, Jesse?
My name is Jesse Uliberry, and I'm the co-executive director at the State Innovation Exchange. And I come to this work as a person who, from my very first breath, was impacted by public policy. I'm from a part of town just north of Denver called Commerce City. It's the part of town that you smell before you see. It has the wastewater treatment plant, the coal fire power plant, the oil refinery. And I grew up in a mixed race family as a queer person in poverty in a predominantly immigrant community. So every aspect of my identity, every opportunity that I either had access to or did not have access to was deeply ingrained both with my lived experience and the public policies that shaped my life. And so I got into community organizing mostly around economic justice, racial justice, immigrant rights, and LGBT equality at a very young age, seeing the vast disparities experienced in my family, whether it was my family members who were struggling with asthma because of the environmental impacts that we all lived in growing up around toxic waste, or it was the lack of access to healthcare or the lack of good quality public schools. And being able to see that and then wanting to change those things pulled me into student activism. I went to my first grassroots lobby visit when I was 18 years of age, fought against the supermajorities of Republicans in the Colorado legislature at the time who were trying to double in-state tuition, and then became hooked on the idea that people had power and that we could shift the outcomes in public policy if we showed up in terms of capitals. And so by the time I was 19, I was the registered lobbyist for the student government at the University of Colorado Boulder, representing access to higher education issues, fighting for things like in-state tuition for undocumented folks, expanded access to financial aid supports. And that pulled me into tax and budget policy and all of the interdependent and complicated workings of state government. And I've been fighting on public policy ever since. The first time I ever testified in committee, it was to a Republican chair about our in-state tuition for undocumented students. That chairman ended up reporting all of the undocumented folks in that committee hearing to ICE. And 10 years later, I became the state senator that got to pass that bill into law and preside over the full Senate. So I come to this work as someone who fought on the outside for a long time to make public policy changes. And when we weren't winning on the outside, I took my skills on the inside of state government. I was elected to represent the community I grew up in, including the trailer park where I spent my earliest years of life. And from that vantage point, realized there's so much possibility for us to immediately, positively improve people's lives if we can move transformative public policy that really is rooted in people's lived experience. And the job is really hard. And so I come with a deep view of what movement building looks like, understand how challenging the work of governance is, and the need for us to be boldly moving forward progressive public policy. And excited to do this work side by side with Neha, who recruited me to this role.
Both of you sound incredibly capable and experienced people. And I think this is an important organization that very few people know about. At least I didn't know about it until I started really exploring the space. And I've been in politics for a long time. Can you talk, Neha, about what Six looked like when you arrived?
Happy to. So Six is actually only 6 years old. So in some ways, even though it feels like this is work that should have been going on for a long time, it's a relatively young organization. So when I joined back in fall of 2017, Six sort of was on this cusp of organizational transformation. It started out in 2014 being a very sort of like lean seven-person organization, right, that was national in scope. And because it was trying to learn about where an organization like Six could fit in, was doing a lot of on-demand sort of support, whether it was training for legislators that were requesting that, you know, building, trying to build up relationships with the legislators, let them know that we're a resource and a strategy center that was available to them. But it was kind of like an entrepreneurial sort of model. A lot of people doing a lot of different things and really trying to figure out what was the best way to prove that theory of change, that power at this investment in power at the state level is where real change was going to happen if we could catalyze it. When I came on board, it was probably right around the time when Six was experiencing a major transformation due to several grants being given to the organization to really flesh out the in-state work, as well as build national issue level programming. So, you know, when I was hired, it was right around the time when a team of 14 people were being pulled together, 10 of whom would be in-state state directors, really helping to organize state legislators and partners in those particular states. It was also around the time when we stood up our first national issue program area on reproductive justice and rights, which was meant to be more of sort of like a national policy expertise, sort of like any legislator in any of the 50 states could access and we would provide services to. It was sort of an entrepreneurial organization. It was just starting to stand up, proving its theory of change with a large amount of investment, and was also much more demand driven in terms of like when we see something, we will go. And in the last 3 years, just the wholesale shift that we've seen in, now we are almost a 40-person full-time organization. We have 3 issue programs. We have now a co-executive leadership model. Our last 6 of 7 hires have been people of color. Our management makeup has really changed, you know, in terms of just how we're trying to live our values within the organization as well. There's the simultaneous program growth, and there's also grappling with how do we build the kind of organization that lives the values that we're trying to reflect in the policy that we are trying to champion as well. And so that journey has been really important for us too.
Was Nick Rathod outgoing? Did you overlap with him?
Yeah, he brought me into the organization, actually. So,
because I interviewed him on the podcast right as he was outgoing, I remember.
No, I was a consultant with Six when he was executive director. So we overlapped for about 4 months before he transitioned out and then I came in.
And wasn't there some kind of mergers of shells of previous organizations that made the basis for Six?
Mm-hmm, in 2014. Yeah, there were about 3... Jesse, was it 3 or 4, depending on how you count cows. But yeah, it was a merger. So a lot of staff that were part of those organizations sort of came together as that first initial group, and Nick was asked to lead that. But yeah, we overlapped for about 4 months.
Jesse, can you explain how you get hired as executive director? If I just understood the story, somehow you guys become co-executive directors, the interim and the new, or how did that all happen?
Of course, yeah.
It's a good story.
For those who aren't really familiar with Six as an entity, we empower and embolden state legislators to act on behalf, by, with, and for their constituents to move transformative, liberatory public policy. And so often we're seen in contrast to ALEC. And by and large, in our earliest years, I think folks wanted us to be ALEC of the left. And what that looked like was people really wanting us to embody the tactics and strategies of conservative actors, just put out model bills, just replicate exactly what the right has done, and somehow that will produce better outcomes. And for us, we wholesale reject that approach because consolidating wealth and power in the hands of very few to benefit very few people in this country has produced disastrous results for us across the board in our economy and our democracy. So as we see what Six can do, we understand we're playing in the same terrain. But what really inspired me to join Six was connecting with Neha and hearing in her voice a deep passion for wanting to see us engage very differently and how we resource and support state legislators, often whom are part-time in nature. You know, the average salary for a state legislator is about $35,000 a year, and most folks have no paid staff. And so as you think about movement champions who've been fighting on the outside of government for a long time, like I was, and then step into public leadership, we are setting up our public officials, especially those who are values aligned with us, to fail. Because we're asking them to take on some of the biggest challenges, whether it's the climate crises that we see coast to coast right now, or it's the racial injustices that are endemic in every public institution and the state violence experienced by folks of color, specifically Black folks and other people of color, or it's the pandemic and the ongoing recession that we're faced with. These are huge, challenging public policy issues that require deep technical expertise. And so I met Neha at a conference. I was co-interim executive director at Wellstone Action at the time, which was a training organization for candidates and campaign managers. And I had been approached a few times about applying for the role of executive director at Six. And I had seen a lot of the replication of similar tactics from ALEC, and I didn't really think those were going to work. I had been public about those in conversations with folks that I had collaborated with. I was a legislator within the Six Network when I was serving as a state senator, and I appreciated the space to connect with other legislators and to find policy solutions and connect with movement partners, and still felt like there was a lot of capacity to shift what was possible. And so at a conference, Neha pulled me aside and said, "Hey, I think we could build something great here. We're at a cusp of transformation, and we're shifting our strategy away from this top-down national approach, but really deeply investing both in issue expertise and in state directors who deeply understand their local ecosystems. Those folks are acting as senior strategists and organizers, really helping legislators get access to the resources that they need so they can do their jobs really well and that they can serve their constituents really well. And it's not going to be easy because it's going to mean a lot of growth and shifting the culture of the organization and changing the institution, but really going all in on a movement out strategy rather than a national down strategy. And that's what inspired me to say, this looks really exciting. And the way I became the executive director and ultimately how we share leadership is I turned back to Neha and I said, so this sounds like a really wonderful and challenging job. Why don't you want it? And she said, well, it's a big job. And I don't know if it's a job alone for one person. And so I said, well, why don't you stay? Why don't we do this together? And let's do it in partnership because there's more than enough work to go around. And I knew that I was being earnest in that. It's a big job, especially as non-Black people of color in leadership, taking over an institution in growth and transformation, really thinking about the possibility of state legislative reform on a whole host of progressive issues. This is a big task. And so we started in partnership. You know, in a lot of places, co-leadership isn't formally acknowledged, but we see it everywhere. We see it in, you know, the way that decisions are made in institutions. We see it in the way that people run, you know, leadership caucuses in state legislatures. You have a majority leader and a president. You have people who hold different parts of leadership and do it in partnership. And so we said, if we think that governance really is an act of shared leadership between the deep desires of people in our communities who need policies to change and legislators who have their hands on the levers of power, what would it look like for us to have that kind of partnership inside of Six at the helm?
It sounds wonderful. When I have spoken, say, in the entrepreneurial world to companies run by partners, I often see tremendous contention, ego, someone shirking work, personality issues. Did you worry about that? Did you structure anything to put yourself on a path to successfully collaborating?
I originally thought that I wasn't going to stay at Six. I thought, you know, I've been helming this place. I'm happy to sort of recruit someone, bring them up to speed. I believe deeply in this. I never wanted to be an executive director, which is sort of why I share with Jesse. I'm like, oh, it's a big job. It's not really for me. And to be quite frank, you know, I wasn't sure that because I don't necessarily bring the specific experience in the state policy landscape, I wasn't necessarily sure that that would be the right fit for me. Even though I deeply believed in the work and wanted to be able to set the place up for success, it was a passion of mine for me. Jesse, somehow, when we started talking, the question he posed back at me when he said, you know, what about shared leadership? What about trying to do this in a way that we can build a different kind of vision for the organization we want to work in and support legislators with? I wish I could tell you it was something more scientific. It was sort of an instinct that said, this person is someone who I want to build with. I don't know a lot about him. He doesn't know a lot about me. We come from very different backgrounds, but felt very deeply that we shared a set of values about how we wanted the world to be and what our role was in showing up there. And that really was our common base for saying, I trust where you're coming from. So let's start this. I think that was sort of the initial basis for that.
Jesse, a lot of times when you come into an organization, a lot of people want to maximize their personal power. They want to establish that they're the person in charge. What were you thinking that you were so ready to share with this person who could have been outgoing?
I think for me, being both a queer person and a person of color, some of the dominant forms of leadership have been the most challenging for me to deal with personally. This idea that a single person leads and others follow, because that hasn't been my experience. It's been my experience in organizing or in my own personal battles and journeys that when people come together and share work and they share in the grief and the pain and the joy, that's when you're actually supported to do your best. And maybe I'll give an example. In 2010, I was helping to run a large-scale field operation for Latino voters in Colorado. And there were many other Latino organizations doing similar work at the time, but with different constituencies. And we often felt pitted against each other. It was, tell us which field group does the best, and you'll get the biggest reward. One of you will succeed while all of you fail. And as a younger person in that role said, well, that seems silly because I'm not fighting to be the best organizer. I want my community to not get deported. I want my community to have the ability to be in the middle class or to send their kids to college in the way that my parents did. And so when we started to come together, we created a what we called the Latino Working Group. It was an affiliation of Latino civic engagement groups, all of whom who said, let's put aside our egos. Let's actually test this out and see if we can coordinate our C3 voter registration, voter mobilization programs without ego. And all of us get equal credit, which means there's not going to be one single person who gets to take all the credit, but all of us are going to change the dynamics. It was that field program that actually helped the landscape change in Colorado, both in terms of the outcomes electorally that year. Michael Bennett became U.S. Senator and has had been a lead champion on immigration reform in Colorado because of that kind of intervention. But it also created a different political dynamic, which ultimately led to the creation of new maps in the state legislature and included the seat that I was drawn into, an open seat that was a predominantly Latino district. By rejecting this idea that there's a single leader and that one person alone should get credit, we actually significantly improved the outcomes for our community as well. We defeated a ballot measure that was designed to just penalize immigrants. It was designed to take away driver's licenses and other access to driving for undocumented folks. And it was really punitive. And we were able to beat that back at the ballot box. So it's those experiences that said to me, if I enter into leadership anywhere, I need to find people who are values aligned, who are willing to do this work and without ego. And that meant saying, early on with Neha, what is your vision of the world and how can we build it up together? Because I actually share that vision. You know, I've been in the progressive movement long enough. I started, like I said, when I was 17, 18 years old. So 2 decades in, and there's a lot of examples in our movement of charismatic men who take credit for the work of the women who lead by their side. And I've seen that countless examples in the organizations I've worked in, and I didn't want to be counted among folks like that. And I think that's something that compelled me to be in partnership with Neha, is that we were both clear-eyed about the unique challenges of our movement and the things that we're fighting in state capitals across the country. And then also the kinds of shifts that are necessary for us to really embody our values day to day in the work that we do. And that is equally important. We say at Six that the how of our work informs the outcomes, right? If you don't have people of color in the decision-making tables, guess what? Your policy is likely to be inequitable. It is the same for us inside of Six, that we have experienced lots of different kinds of nonprofit structures that value traditional leadership. And we said, what if we charted a new course that really put aside ego and said, let's do this hard work together. And it means tension, right? It is kind of like a marriage. We have arguments, we have disagreements about strategy, but it's done from a place of love and care and saying, how can we do better every single day and acknowledge when we fall short? And having that kind of thought partnership and sounding board really transforms what's possible inside of an organization. And we think that shared leadership increases leadership. It doesn't mean less work, though, unfortunately.
Neha, how do you divide up the work?
We've actually been deliberate about checking with other organizations that have a co-leadership model just to be able to learn from others that are on this journey as well. And we know that a lot of folks generally tend to have sort of like an external ED and an internal ED, and we reject that binary a bit. Jesse and I both share leadership for board management, for fundraising, for external partner management, though we do a lot of sort of dividing up about what initiatives within those we may lead. So for example, within board management, Jesse will be, you know, helming with our board the fundraising subcommittee, while I might helm the governance subcommittee. For the funders that we have, there's generally, we both will build relationships with those funders so they understand when they're speaking with either of us, we speak for one another, but each of us will sort of take the helm on saying, I'll drive this particular relationship forward and you know, do X, Y, Z versus others. And then in terms of the internal programmatic side, Jesse is in charge of the cross-cutting programs and services. So things like communications, training, and research. Those sort of services undercut all of our states and issue programs, while I oversee our issue programs as well as our state-based work. That being said, you know, in terms of strategy and thinking about how we overall want to move forward in approaching the work, we're very much aligned. So folks don't feel like, you know, hey, I got one answer from Neha, but if I probably go to Jesse, I'll get a different one. We are very much connected on, like, you know, we don't necessarily step into the day-to-day of managing, you know, just people or portfolios, but we're very aligned on how that work happens and trust that it's happening that way. It's actually made for a pretty smooth kind of partnership, rather than say there's an internal and an external ED, given that we both have experience in program management as well as the fundraising and external side.
So it sounds to me like there's been a tremendous amount of growth. You were talking about 40 some now. That is, in any form of organization, a lot of change in a couple of years. Tell me about like what has taken place as you've grown this enterprise over that time.
When I joined, it was probably like 12. Part of what felt like the most tremendous amount of change in the first couple of years of that transformative growth was just around the infrastructure that it takes to manage that number of people, right? Like, I think when you're talking about smaller organizations with smaller sets of people where folks are doing a little bit of everything, some of it was just about standing up an organization and some of the systems and internal processes that go with that, along with the people management that comes with that. So, right, like making sure there's infrastructure for actual teams and supervisors and contract deliverables, internal accounting policies, just the nuts and bolts of setting up a formal organization from an entrepreneurial set. So that's one. Then just figuring out what is that sort of consistent level approach to the work. As Jesse mentioned, you know, folks sort of always equated Six with the Alec of the Left sort of tagline. And determining really that we did not want to do that, we didn't want to replicate that. What did that look like? Were there models that we actually wanted to go with? Or is there something new that we wanted to chart? But is there a consistent way that we did the work that we wanted to espouse? So that framework was really important for us. We went through our first ever strategic planning process as an organization last summer. We've articulated a theory of change. We've done, you know, organization-wide values identification and definition. But just really figuring out, you know, Six can't be everything to everyone. So really, where do we see our strategic goals? Where do we operate? Where are we the most effective? How do we work in the progressive ecosystem? And what is really that change? So for us, a lot of it was just organizing around that and then sort of building up the organization's infrastructure to support that work that has really been a large part of our transformation.
So Six as an organization and transformation really has looked at the ways that we can embody our values day in and day out in our internal and external work and acknowledge that we don't get it right all the time and that we need to shift. For us, it's meant in our strategic planning process, acknowledging the real barriers to true liberatory public policy if we're not grappling with race and racism and anti-Blackness in our public policy, public structures, and then thinking about the purpose of public policy. It's not the passage of policy alone, and it should never be an activity that is just about two teams vying for power, just for power's sake. It really should be about improving people's lives. And so if we're not focused on the outcomes of public policy, we're really missing the mark in our work. Over this last year, we've been working to integrate a race equity lens to all that we do internally and externally. And that means thinking about the ways that our systems of power really disproportionately benefit white folks in our country and have historically harmed Black, Indigenous people of color. And as we think about that, what might it look like as we shift power, knowing still that 80% of state legislators are white folks and predominantly men, there's a real need for us to rapidly and expansively change our programming to make sure that in every aspect of public policy, there's a deep understanding of the way that race, power, privilege, and oppression impact our work. And so that's work that's ongoing. Maybe I'll say for some of our programmatic work, the real shifts we've seen as we've grown is to say, what would it be like if Six really existed as an entity that allows legislators to fight better and fight differently in every single context? And this is a shift that goes from that national down approach to really one that's movement centered. You know, some of our tactics before Neha and I took over the helm is understandable in entrepreneurial mode, where you say, we'll fly into a state, we'll offer training, and then we'll leave. And when you only have seven staff members, you don't have the capacity to keep folks on the ground. As we've grown, though, we've realized there's a real asset in making sure that legislators have ongoing, continual support in the work that they need. And I'll give an example. As we have state directors, we are often finding ways for those state directors to work with legislators on public policy issues that are emerging and to connect them with movement actors, maybe, you know, policy experts, researchers, and others who can help them craft great public policy, but also to be in community with other legislators who are grappling with the same challenges. This summer, as the pandemic broke out, we had many states and state legislators who were grappling with this idea of expanding either access to paid family and medical leave or to paid sick days, so they could not, you know, be forced into eviction or face other economic consequences or hardship because there wasn't protection for workers who got sick. So we convened a strategy session with legislators across the country, people who were actively looking at the legislation, and worked with different researchers and policy groups to show a wide array of policy options that folks could jump into. This wasn't a one-size-fits-all approach. It wasn't, let's just jump in and here's a model bill. It was saying the dynamics in your state really matter. The policy formation in your state really matters, and it should be done in close conjunction with your local actors. Our state directors then were able to work with state legislators as they thought about the creation and formation of coalitions, what it would look like to then push those bills in sometimes special sessions or normal legislative sessions, and sometimes in sessions where folks were moving to Zoom to do their committee work or floor work. This was a shift for us to say, let's continue to provide support all across the country in ways that are really meaningful to legislators. It's also meant that we've looked at non-traditional ways of engaging legislators and organizing them so they can be better advocates on the issues that come before them. Last year, we worked on pulling together a delegation of legislators from southern states predominantly who were faced with abortion bans. We took them to El Salvador to show what it looks like when a country actually outlaws abortion and the great harms to communities, to women, to families, when women are incarcerated because of and criminalized because of abortion and miscarriage and other reproductive rights. By going there and being in deep community with each other and then seeing the real harmful impacts of an abortion ban nationally, they've come back to be some of the most ardent supporters for access to abortion and reproductive rights and additional healthcare, particularly along lines of race and difference. And they've been able to lift up their voices across state lines and talk about the very harmful approach that we've seen with the bans on abortion moving through southern states. These are some of the best champions that we have on the front lines who are able to then say, this is what it actually could look like in our state. And this isn't hyperbole. We actually have evidence in other places. And this is why we're going to fight even harder to make sure that these kinds of laws don't become permanent in our state. And they've also done work to share out their stories from what they saw in El Salvador to legislators who are considering expanding abortion rights and reproductive health care in northern states, states that actually have an opportunity to act today. And it's that kind of deep organizing and connecting work that SICT is doing that doesn't just be, here's a drop in and drop out kind of model. Here's a model bill, best of luck. It is, let's actually think about the ways that we can really help you be the best advocate, be the most bold in your advocacy as possible as you serve in public leadership.
I hear kind of loud and clear how much focus you have on this race equity lens, on hiring a diverse staff. You talked about movement up rather than top down. What advantage do you think that gives you in thinking about things freshly, and what resistance does that create or not create among the legislators who you referred to as mostly white men that you have to deal with?
This is the question of what does this gain us? I think it gains moral clarity for the legislators who want to do work really well and are looking for ways to jump into really challenging dynamics, centuries in the making, as they have their hands on the public policy levers of things about which schools get funding and why. That's rooted in history. Which communities get support for workforce training? That's rooted in history and why. So part of what we have to do is reckon with race very publicly and talk about the ways that everyone in this country, white, black, brown alike, are really pitted against each other, often by the wealthy and well-connected. And so as we do that, we look at opportunities for us to engage in authentic and clear-eyed conversations about the kind of work then that is essential in public policy. This is the thing. You can't just put forward a democracy bill or a bill on paid family medical leave and do it with a race blind view. We actually have to be race explicit because the outcomes of public policy are race explicit, even if they're not enumerated in the text of the bill. What it gets us is a clarity of how to move forward in a way that builds support across racial groups. And that is the act of governing. There is not one single legislator in this country that represents an all-white district or an all-black district. There are folks who might represent majority districts one way or the other, but we live in a multiracial democracy and a multiracial economy. And so part of what we have to do is challenge folks in power to think about the ways that they can structurally change the outcomes for all people. So this is a country that lives up to its highest aspirations. and one where all people can thrive and where all folks have access to equal justice under the law. And unfortunately, that's not the case today. I think for us, the work that we do with legislators and how it's advantageous is we provide tools, resources, trainings. We help folks actually talk about really difficult subjects that people are taught to avoid. You know, we hear, don't talk about religion or politics or race in this country. Well, when you're in politics, you have to talk about all three. So we do trainings on how to engage your constituents. We provide public forums for folks to jump in. And we're talking about every single public policy issue, whether it's sustainable agriculture and climate change, to voting in elections, to the right to protest, to police brutality. All of these issues come before state legislators, and so they have to be prepared.
Neha, how do you pick up the second part of that question, which is about interacting with existing legislators and how they deal with this way that you're coming to things?
Yeah, I mean, I think the best way to talk about it is it's a work in progress, right? There's legislators, what we've seen in the last, especially in the last election, is a huge influx of people of color legislators who have, you know, stepping into governing for the first time, who are trying to bring that as a central way of organizing and policy reform to the table. And they're coming up against, you know, a structure and a system that's been set up not necessarily to have race and equity at the center of the policy and the political work. Work in progress sounds a little trite, but there are folks that are willing to step into that and understand that there's complexity in that. There's not like sort of a one right way or wrong way. And there's folks that resist that, obviously, because it's either slower, it's more deliberate work. It may not necessarily, you know, agree or sort of be as neatly packaged, right? When it comes to sort of, here's how we need to get X policy passed. It's only going to go this far. We can't go all the way over there because that's not going to work, right? And people in the legislative space, obviously, you know, goes without saying, are dealing with so many different levers, whether it's their own personal elections, it's their own sort of campaigns, their own electability, their own coalitions. And what we're trying to build here is saying there are ways for us to govern that actually, if we're doing it by, with, and for people, actually we can change the system to reflect that. I call it sort of generational work. There are folks that are newly in the governing space that are really into that, in for that ride. And there are others that are like, I want to get into that, but I don't know how. How is this possible? And others that will resist because it just sort of goes in the face of like, this is how it's always been done. And that's hard kind of change, right? So we try to speak to the fact that legislators, depending on, you know, where they sit, are different parts of the journey. And we can only say like, there's not one way to do this. We recognize depending on what state you're in, what your environment is, progress can look very different in whatever state you're in. Moving the needle on the governing can look very different. And that sixth wants to be there to support you in those steps. Rather than sort of saying, oh, you didn't do it all this right way, well, then that was all wrong, right? It's just sort of a work in progress all around.
So maybe I'll give an example to help really clarify what this looks like in practice from some work we did on minimum wage in Pennsylvania. I think when people hear the term race equity, they can acknowledge that this means talking about race explicitly and that we're also looking at the outcomes of public policy with an anti-racist framework, meaning does this policy get us closer to equity and that regardless of your race, the outcomes of policy are similar, better educational attainment or wages. And in this example, we hosted a national convening back in 2018. It was the first national convening where Neha and I were in leadership. And one of our keynote speakers, it wasn't a politician, it wasn't a presidential candidate, which is something we had seen in previous national convenings. In fact, it was Saru Jarayaman, who runs One Fair Wage, the national effort to get the minimum wage increased and to completely eliminate the disparity we see with tipped workers, particularly who are women and particularly women of color, who are subjected to high rates of harassment and intimidation as women in the workplace, largely service jobs, because they rely on tips. And so she gave this impassioned speech at the conference talking about how she had stood up many times before to push for an increase in the federal minimum wage and had never actually challenged this idea that keeping the sub-federal minimum wage for tipped workers, and this is how it works in most states as well, keeping the sub-wage for tipped workers and allowing tips to be included in the minimum wage, she had never seen the harm until she started organizing with restaurant workers. As she started to tell this story, we saw on the face of many of our legislators, including the delegation from Pennsylvania, many of those leaders who had stood up in those fights, had fought for increases in minimum wage and had never challenged this idea of eliminating the disparity for tipped workers. At the conclusion of her remarks, the Democratic leader from Pennsylvania approached Saru nearly in tears and was just flabbergasted to hear how he had also continued to fight for minimum wage increases and had never questioned the underlying basis of the way the wage system had been set up and how it had permitted ongoing sexual harassment of restaurant workers, particularly women and particularly women of color. And by never actually challenging the premise of policy, he really didn't understand what could be possible. After that meeting, he's been one of the biggest leaders now on eliminating the, you know, the disparities in minimum wage, pushing for an aggressive increase in minimum wage, but really acknowledging that the outcomes of policy rest in his hands and in the hands of his colleagues within the state chamber. So as we think about that, it's, yes, we can push for a higher minimum wage, and we can do it in a way that actually benefits white working class folks, brown working class folks, men and women alike. And it requires a high diligence to the policymaking process and not just moving through the actions of here's a good talking point and here's a good idea, but often grappling with, you know, structures and systems and policies of which legislators write that have been built on centuries of oppression. So what might it look like for every single legislator, white, black, brown alike, to challenge themselves to a higher standard of leadership in a moment where so many of those chickens are coming home to roost? We are seeing in real time the harmful and damning effects of systemic racism and state violence. We are seeing in real time the ignorance and, you know, the denial of climate change as wildfires ravage the West and, you know, hurricanes ravage the South. We see in real time the way that worker power has been diminished as we go through this pandemic. And we are on the cusp of a tsunami of a major recession as states go back into session, and they've seen huge decreases in state revenue. And that will have long-lasting impacts to all of our state structures, like our public institutions, our roads, our schools, every other aspect of civic life will be impacted. And so we sit at this threshold of transformation and say, the standard of leadership can't be status quo. We have to push harder and have to really understand all of the interlocking and interwoven components of how to shift power, because guess what, state legislators, that's your job.
If I shouldn't think about Six as the Alec of the left, what should I think of it as?
You can think of us as the anti-Alec or the Alec Slayers. We're not going to win by replicating their tactics. We're going to win by building a movement of leaders, both inside state houses and outside of them, who can, you know, really rebuild our economy and one that allows all people to thrive. And same thing with our democracy. It's going to look so substantially different than what they've put forward in their vision of the world, one where wealthy and well-connected people can pay for a model bill to just go across the country with no input or investment from real folks on the ground. And we offer a different view that democracy is a hands-on experiment and one where people in their local community should be deeply connected to the people who represent them, helping to shape what's possible in state capitals. And then those state legislators themselves are given all of the tools, resources, and assets that they need to be successful in their work. So you can think of us as the anti-Alec or, you know, the Alec Slayer, or just what is needed for real true governance to happen from a progressive view.
How does Six fit into the progressive ecosystem? What's your lane? What are the boundaries of what you do? Who do you collaborate with? Who are your best allies?
We say that our mission is to really empower and embolden progressive state legislators to make transformative change. And what that means is that we're helping them to fight better and fight differently in every context. We provide training, support, policy briefings, policy research, ongoing convenings to put legislators in deeper relationship with each other across the country, and then connecting them to local movement actors, advocacy groups, organizing groups, membership groups, to make sure that there is real true people power and policymaking in the state legislative context. So at the national level, many, you know, advocacy groups see legislators as accountability of targets alone. Do this or else, or we won't, you know, work on your campaign. Six operates in a very different lane. We don't play in elections. We don't endorse candidates. What we do instead is focus on the fights that begin after elections end, and that is the challenge of public policymaking. Most folks don't know that state legislators have no paid staff or very few staff resources. Most folks don't know that state legislators are usually part-time and usually don't make much of a salary. And so part of the work that we do is to say, if we want these people to succeed in their policy goals, what are the ways that we can really build up their skills, their knowledge, and then provide direct resources to them to engage in those policy fights? And so our work is that lane. Other folks really rely on legislators doing their jobs well. And unfortunately, it's been too long in this country where we haven't really thought about the role of public leadership and public life for those legislators. It is not an accident that by design, our elected representatives skew wealthy and older. When you have to have another full-time job or be independently wealthy to serve in the legislature, it excludes lots of folks. And so as we think about those structural barriers to full representative democracy, we can come in and provide unique supports to these folks who have stepped in to public leadership. And as they get better at policy analysis and being able to build coalitions, and that they get better at moving policy within their chambers and within their caucuses, and really challenge the dynamics internally in the state legislative context, they're going to do better on all of the issues that people care about. This is why we see ourselves as a movement utility, one where we need to focus in on building the capacity of these champions to do their jobs really well, and to provide a space where they can access resource, partnership, collaboration in a way that other groups might not provide it. For us, it's important that we hold the national view and a broad view of many progressive policy issues that are of deep importance, because often you'll have groups that will come to a legislator with an ask. They'll say, "Hi, state senator, can you run our bill on elections administration?" And another group will come and ask to run another bill on sustainable ag. And often we're not thinking about what are the interrelated and complicated dynamics of what's moving in that chamber. How might we think about strategy, vision, setting up an agenda to build power as an outcome? And in addition to the policy wins, what might it look like to continue to say we can build up bigger and bigger community power by layering in our work? So we hold a unique vantage point. Our partners on the national level are those folks who work in economic justice, racial justice, reproductive rights and justice, climate change. We work with folks kind of in every corner of the progressive movement nationally, whether it's on state tax and fiscal policy, or it's on issues of, you know, local control and local democracy and what that might mean. In the state level, we work with a similar set of actors: advocacy groups, membership organizations, labor unions, reproductive rights providers, and many others, to say, what does it look like when we get the best thinking from national and state actors to move really good policy that can be shared across the line?
Where are you guys getting your funding? How secure is that out into the future? And are you getting funded at a level that sort of is necessary to have the balance of power with the right be equal enough that we can win around the country?
This is one of my biggest critiques of our movement and how people think about power. If you look at election spending in one U.S. Senate race, in any of the contested races this year, you're talking about tens of millions of dollars in hard side candidate contributions, and then in soft side independent expenditures and C3 or C4 organizing work to mobilize voters. We really fall short if we think that election day is the end of the race. And many people think that. Let's just put all of our money into winning the election and then things will be fine the day after. And in fact, it's not a marathon. It's a triathlon. You got to run the race. You also got to swim in the water of policymaking. And then you got to get on that bike and make sure it can ride down the road. Comparatively, when you look at the amount of money that's spent on elections, you know, 2016 is where we spent hundreds of millions of dollars in that election cycle on the federal election alone. Six is a much smaller entity, and we are not yet grappling at the scale. So if folks would like to donate, they can go to stateinnovation.org and make a contribution, put us in your will. And I'm not joking about that, because as we think about the kinds of resources on the right, well-connected and wealthy interests are infinitely resourced in state legislatures. And just to make it very real, when I was a state senator, there were three progressive lobbyists that worked in the building, and they represented every single progressive group in the state. They represented both the AFL-CIO and the ACLU and Planned Parenthood and, you know, the Colorado Immigrant Rights Coalition. And at the same time, every single local chamber of commerce had at least two dedicated lobbyists for themselves, for every single city chamber of commerce. You know, the right has infinitely invested in state level public policy making because it has yielded significant financial returns on their behalf. So there needs to be a shift, not just for six, but for all of the folks who are doing state level advocacy to be deeply resourced. One of my friends and someone I really look up to in this movement, Ashley Henderson, who runs the Highlander Center, she says frequently, and I want to quote her here, "Fund us like you want us to win." Right? Mike Bloomberg had a Super Bowl commercial, spent millions of dollars on that. Six year over year raises about $10 million for the work that we do in states that has an immeasurable impact on everyone's life in this country. And we should be funded at 10, 20 times that amount. And even then, we wouldn't be funded at scale to our opposition. We receive support from individual contributors, folks who give monthly to us, folks who make larger investments, and then foundations and movement partners who really deeply invest in the work ahead. And so unlike ALEC, we're not a pay-to-play model. You don't just get to be a member and then have access to legislators. We work in deep coordination coalition. And, you know, as a C3 organization, publicly disclosed where our funding comes from.
That was somewhat sitting behind my question. And it seems to me like the challenge of going up against an operation that actually reaps commercial benefit from changes to the laws that help specific companies or industries is highly different than an organization pushing for broad-based benefits to human beings. It's tricky to figure out, does the funding model then have to be more broad-based, or can you do this with, you know, enlightened donors on the left that have done well? How do you think about that?
Yeah, this is a big question for us and one that we grapple with. Neha and I spend a lot of our time talking to movement partners, institutional actors, foundations, and individual donors who want to come along with us in this work. I think as folks spend more time really thinking about their daily life, very rarely are we asked to think about the way that public structures shape our daily being, from the fact that we have regulated internet while folks are officing at home, to the idea that we should have public schools that teach our kids. All of these things we often take for granted. There is a need for us to push more broadly into other funding networks as something that we've expanded at Six, and we're really proud of the way that we're doing it without compromising our values. We talked a little bit at the beginning of this of how we've started to grow out our organization. And it's not just that we've grown from a place of, you know, have more staff. It's also meant that we live our values. We provide 100% healthcare coverage to our employees. We provide paid family medical leave. We've given folks time off during the pandemic and have provided unique benefits that really reckon with the kind of harmful ways that sometimes our nonprofits actually replicate inequity. Doing a pay equity review and restoring pay for folks who had experienced pay disparities over time. It's those kinds of things that funders have helped us to do and to allow us to show what we're asking of state legislators to do in policy is possible, and that we can be an employer that does the same. And so we are really eager to build out a broader base of folks who support this movement for change and see that it is long, hard work of transforming hearts and minds, both in state capitals and in our movements. So we can get clear on the outcomes that really matter most.
I think about, you know, my friends who are, you know, so worried about the election and are, you know, making a donation to a Senate race in Montana because it's close. But I wish they would also understand the infrastructure organizations, where I think provide an entirely different kind of value that might have longer duration and might be, you know, more impactful for the dollar. And that's why I'm interested in folks like you and organizations like this.
Yeah, thank you. We agree.
Is there a question that I failed to ask that I should have?
I think what excites me the most about working at Six, just to say, you know, the kind of trust and vulnerability that I think Jesse and I try to show up with in relationship with one another, as well as in relationship with our staff, is a little bit of how we're asking folks to lean in to the way in which they're organizing with their peers and their legislators, to say that there can be multiple things that are true at the same time. it's meant to be complex and hard. And that doesn't mean that we shy away from the conversation or that we shy away from an approach that we may not know the answer to. And I think that that's how we try to live within the organization and tackle decisions from everything related to internal policy to how we do the work to who we hire. But as well as saying, you know, y'all, we get that that might not necessarily be how the entire political infrastructure operates once they're elected. That being said, we can do better and we can do it differently. We are unique actors. Like, we are the we, right? We're the ones who get to be a part of that. So if folks are showing up, show up with them. And I think that's really what makes it exciting to see, like, what's possible.
It's an honor to talk to both of you today. Anything else you want to say?
No, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Yeah, this is great.
That was Jesse Uliberry and Neha Patel. They're at stateinnovation.org. This is Nathaniel G. Perlman with the Great Battlefield Podcast. You can find us at greatbattlefield.com or by searching for Great Battlefield in places where podcasts are found.